my happy home to see what I could find out. I left my folk and friends with the aim to clear my mind out. Hit the roundy road. Many kinds I've met there. Many stories told me all of the way to get there. Ooh. So on and on I go. The seconds tick, the time out. There's so much left to know when I'm on.
Welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling on KKRN 88.5 FM. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Unspun tries to unravel the hype and illusions of corporate media through in-depth interviews with truth-tellers and advocates from around the world. We are now streaming live on the Internet. Go to kkrn.org and click on the Listen button. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and underwriters like yourselves. Your support keeps us on the air, so don't be shy. Click on that donate button on our same site there at kkrn.org to support our efforts. Unspun is normally a call-in show, but because today's show is pre-recorded, you won't be able to call in. But you can send me an email at unspun@kkrn.org. I'm always open to your comments and suggestions. Today, our guest is Judith Vary Baker. Judith is an artist, writer, poet, teacher, and social scientist slash linguist. She has two books regarding her relationship with Lee Harvey Oswald, the purported assassin of President John F. Kennedy. The first is entitled Me and Lee, How I Came to Know, Love, and Lose Lee Harvey Oswald. That was published in 2010. Her second book, David Feria, Mafia Pilot, Participant in Anti-Castro Bioweapon Plot, Friend of Lee Harvey Oswald, and Key to the JFK Assassination, is just out this month. She is a mother of five who waited 40 years to tell her story. It's a unique story of covert operations, plots, and counterplots. She lives outside the United States but is here promoting her new book. In 2003, a segment of the History Channel series, The Men Who Killed Kennedy, Episode 8, was called The Love Affair. It was dedicated to her relationship with Lee Oswald. This documentary series, filmed in the UK, was suppressed and threatened with lawsuits, and the last three episodes were, quote, quickly banned, and the History Channel apologized to the Johnsons. In 2014, she was asked to host and direct the JFK Assassination Conference held in Dallas on the anniversary of the assassination. Let's welcome our guest, Judith Vary Baker. Judith, welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling.
Well, what a pleasure to be among listeners who want to know the truth.
Well, yes, and we're so lucky on our little community station here, we could actually tell the truth without having to worry about retaliation or loss of sponsors. So that makes it nice for us, too, to be able to have people like you on. I didn't get a chance to read either of your books completely, but I did get a chance to kind of look them over, and I watched a couple of interviews and part of the Men Who Killed Kennedy series. So I got to see you on there. And both your books deal with a period of time beginning in April 1963 and leading up to the Kennedy assassination in Dallas in November of that same year. Much of your story centers around your love affair with Lee Harvey Oswald. So maybe we can start there. How did you meet Lee Harvey Oswald?
Well, I came to New Orleans upon the invitation of a very important cancer research doctor who was internationally famous. And in fact, this doctor, Dr. Ochsner, had worked with two others, Dr. George Moore of Roswell Institute, where I was trained to handle SB40 monkey viruses and to formulate various mediums that would grow cancer faster than had ever been done before. And they had, it's even in the newspapers, the articles saying that I was assigned to figure out how cancer could be made more deadly. And at the time, I was told that this was so that we could find keys to how to cure cancer, you know, to conquer it. I was fooled. I was really invited in New Orleans into a biological weapon development program that was sponsored by the CIA and by Dr. Ochsner. So I was unaware of this at first. I came there 2 weeks early because University of Florida was on trimester system. They got out early. And unfortunately for me, that my doctors that were sponsoring, Dr. Mary Sherman, that I was going to work with, this is the woman you hear about if you read Dr. Mary's Monkey. She was brutally murdered on the 21st of July, 64, the day the Warden Commission came to New Orleans to get testimonies from people like her. As front page news, nobody in New Orleans was going to talk except those who would assert that Lee Oswald was the assassin, you know. Anyway, I was there 2 weeks early, and they were not around, and they hadn't paid for my YWCA room yet. And I had gone there in the middle of the night. I had nowhere else to go, so I was moved in with two strippers, a Playboy bunny, and a waitress into the cheapest room in the Y. I mean, their panties and bras are hanging out window to dry off, you know. And, yeah, they've got a pan on a burner there, you know, boiling away with coffee in it that, you know, you could, if you put a sock in it and hung it up, it would stand up. So there I was, and I was getting myself into the wrong crowd to make it, and of course I was only 19 years old and naive. I needed a rescue, and a young man who was reliable and dependable. We had a lot in common. We both spoke Russian, played chess, both very interested in Russian literature, and this man was Lee Harvey Oswald, and he was sent to protect me and to make sure that I wouldn't get in trouble until the doctors could get back. We met at a post office, and I thought it was by accident, but no, it was no accident. Immediately, he introduced me to David Ferry and to the covert side of the project. That was to kill Fidel Castro, and this method... Mm-hmm. Medical method was determined to try to use that because they tried all kinds of other things, and all of them would lead to some person, some contact that was related to the United States. But if you're getting your DPT shots or something and you got an injection of cancer cells and didn't know it, who are you going to blame? So we had figured out, or I should say my doctors had figured out a way to, with doctors who were disaffected with Castro. You see, Ochsner had actually trained a lot of the doctors that were in Cuba, and they were upset and angry because, first of all, they were put on salaries and they couldn't stay rich anymore. That's number one. Number two, if they had sons that they wanted to train in the United States, like, say, to be a plastic surgeon and make millions, that was not possible anymore. They were being sent to the USSR, and then they were being brought back to work among the peasants. So we had disaffected doctors who were willing to do what they could under the table to help eliminate Castro, and it would be look like natural means. The man smoked cigars constantly. And, of course, Dr. Ochsner, all of 1962 and 63, promoted that cigarettes and cigar smoking caused lung cancer. So it was all set up, even in the media, to, you know, get this stuff into Castro, try to kill him. Because the same people who wanted to kill Castro and take over Cuba, by the way, why Lee Oswald was involved, he cared about Kennedy. So did David Ferry, but that's a long story. And anyway, here I was brought into this group, and it was just astonishing. They thought I knew a lot more about what was going on, too, than I did through a series of very strange coincidences. So there I am in New Orleans, and Lee Oswald is my protector. He even told me he was my handler. Boy, was he ever.
Well, that was an interesting start for a 19-year-old in the world. Well, let me ask you this. How long did it take you to actually come out with your story, and why did you wait so long?
Well, first of all, David Ferry, I had objected ethically to using prisoners without their... They had volunteered, at least one, probably more, had volunteered to be tested with this material, thinking they were helping cancer research. They were prisoners, but if it worked, it would kill them. They weren't told that. And so I was upset about when I found that out, and I went to Dr. Ochsner's clinic, which I was not supposed to go to, and I wrote a note and put it in an envelope and gave it to the old biddy that was sitting there. Actually, Ochsner usually had a really pretty young nurse, but she was on vacation. This is, you know, late summer, 63. And the lady said, well, is this, you know, urgent? I said, yes, it is. So she opened it up and read across the intercom to the doctor that I said it was unethical to use people, you know, who are healthy and give them something that will kill them. Well, that was the end of my cancer research career. I was forced to go back to Florida, but Lee and I by then were in love, and we kept in contact with each other. And after the project was finished, we had hoped that I would be able to fly there. But the day I was scheduled to contact, I was going to be contacted by Alexander Rourke and his pilot, Jeffrey Sullivan, they were shot down. I mean, some of these coincidences, they keep going on and on. You'll see it in the book. Also, I saved everything, Doug. I saved, ever since I knew that I was in a project to try to kill Castro, began saving this because it was historic. So I had everything from paycheck stubs to wooden nickel that David Ferry gave me, things like that. Now, would you repeat the question so that I make sure that I answer it?
Yes. I just wondered why, how long it took you to come out with your story, and why did it take you so long?
I've had head injuries. I've had four concussions from various accidents and so on. So I appreciate your getting me back on track there. I was sent back to Florida, and David Ferry called me and said, whatever you do, don't get your name in the papers or they'll kill you. And he did his best to protect me. He was a very unusual man. He survived 1963 and 64, unlike Dr. Mary Sherman, who was killed July 21st. He survived 1962, 63, and 64 when one of his bosses, Guy Bannister, was found dead with a bullet in his back, but it was ruled a heart attack. And he still managed to keep himself alive in May of 1964, even though his pilot and his own close friend, Mr. Hughes, Hugh Ward, was shot. I should say his plane was exploded, and that was the end of him. So we have May, June, and July, and David survived all that in 1964 when they wiped out a lot of our witnesses and people who were involved. Come up to 1967, and David Ferry's name gets in the headlines because the Garrison case is open, and he is dubbed the getaway pilot for Lee Harvey Oswald, the evil, you know. And now he's in trouble. He calls Lou Ivins and other investigators, and he says, they're going to kill me. You can see that in the film JFK. They dramatize that. He says, you know, I'm a dead man. 5 days later, he's dead. Of course, the paper said it was by natural causes. My book about David Ferry, Mafia pilot, will explain to everyone how it was covered up and how he was really murdered. We have some fantastic material there, and we have new witnesses, too, that have been ignored that are in the book. And it starts with the beginning of Dave's life right to the end and beyond, all the way through the Garrison investigation. So you can see how they destroyed the Garrison investigation. Well, see, Dave told me to be quiet. And, of course, when Dave was murdered and all these other people, because they never contacted me again, I knew they were dead. And I was afraid. No name in the paper. So I did not even go to my own sister's wedding. I did not go to my grandparents' funerals. And I love them so much. So it wasn't until 1977 I finally went to my father's funeral. Sure enough, the reporters there did a story on me. But I didn't even know about it, or I would have been terrified. Anyway, let's fast forward. I went on to have children. My precious Lee told me, please have babies. please go on with your life. That was 37 and a half hours before the assassination. Lee told me that he didn't think he'd get out of this thing alive. He had been penetrating these groups. He had passed on information to the FBI. He sent a telex on the 17th, that was Sunday, November 17th, to general offices. And it's filled with his dyslexic misspellings, like assassination instead of assassination. Lee did everything he could, and I told people this all the way back in 1999, and it was hard for them to believe. They said, well, sure, we can believe he's framed, but please don't say he tried to save the president's life. Lee was shot to death in front of 70 police officers by a mafia bagman and nightclub owner. That was Jack Ruby, who knew him, didn't want to do it, even called into the police, we're going to shoot him if you bring him out. Of course, they brought him out. And Will Fritz, who was in charge of the police investigation there, is walking in front of Lee. You can see it in the film. He moves to one side. We have a tuning of a horn that goes off. Bang! And then Lee's shot. And you know what? Will Fritz doesn't even turn around. Everybody else is starting screaming, and they're turning around to see what happened. It takes him several seconds before he turns around and looks. He knew it was coming. And so you can imagine my anger and distress when I see how Lee was murdered, and I love him so much, and they have done these things, and they can cover it up. I had children then, I had babies, and I didn't want them to be involved, I didn't want them to get hurt. But by 1998, in mid-December, my daughter got married and went on her honeymoon, and that was my last child of five. So the next day after she left, I got the movie out, JFK, which I had been afraid to look at with any of my children present. I was afraid I'd break down and cry. They wonder what's going on. Now, I knew Lee Oswald. Many people knew I knew him because back in 1980, at the end of 1980, there were 35 people present when my son reached for a special glass high up in the cupboard, and I had to cry out to him across the room, don't touch that. Lee Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald gave that to me. So there it was. A lot of people knew back in the 80s that we were friends. I said we rode the streetcars together. We worked together. They didn't know we were lovers. Of course, I'm married to a man. I couldn't bring that up because that was the man who abandoned me early on in our marriage in New Orleans. And it was Lee there who saved me so many times. I have peculiar things, Doug. I have, for example, an interesting postcard, and it's in the book, Me and Lee. Many other things are there. But this postcard is a postcard of New Orleans. And it happens to be addressed to me, and I'm living in New Orleans. But it's my husband who has written a postcard to me. As he's passing through New Orleans, he decides he doesn't have enough time to see me. So that's the kind of marriage we had after only married a couple of months. I mean, he just wasn't there, and it hurt me so badly.
You're listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today is Judith Vary Baker, Lee Harvey Oswald's lover and confidant during the period leading up to JFK's assassination. She is the author of two books, revealing what she claims are facts that clear Lee Oswald. Today's show is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking calls in the studio. Now back to our interview. And I guess you kind of answered my question because obviously you were afraid that you endanger your family and yourself by saying anything early on. Unlike so many of the people you knew had already died or from whatever causes under strange situations. So the other big question, the Warren Commission has criticized for years as fraud, has been criticized for years.
The Warren Commission.
Yeah, yeah. Did anyone from the government, the FBI, CIA, congressional investigators, ever contact you about your involvement in the plot to kill President Kennedy? And I guess I have to ask, if they didn't, if so many people knew that you knew Lee Harvey Oswald, how come they didn't interview you or take a deposition or anything like that?
Well, it's very interesting that I was probably debriefed a number of times, but it never got in the Warren Commission. And I'll give you another example. David Ferry, who is prominent in this, what should have been very prominent in the investigation, they did interview him extensively. He's not even mentioned at all in the Warren Commission report, despite 26 volumes. And, you know, we have the other things that's going on is that I was protected, you might say, because I was Jay Baker, or Jay Very, I should say Jay. But that could be a man or a woman. Dave called me Jay. We didn't use my full name. And I was Jay and Very, if you knew the whole name. But everywhere else, when I went back to Florida, and for the many, many years, I was Mrs. Robert Ellison Baker III. And it's very hard to find somebody when, and then I became a Mormon, and then I'm just Sister Baker, and I mean, nobody knew about my past, and I wanted to keep it that way. But basically, we have, even Guy Bannister, he's mentioned in the Warren Commission, but they waited until he's dead to try to interview him. You know, that's what they did with most of these people. So they're not, you can find very little information about the people who were really involved. And in 1967, Jim Garrison realized that it all started in New Orleans. The plot to kill Kennedy, the plot to kill Castro that we're talking about, were basically by the same people. And this is a consortium. And when you have a ring of people who are involved, I'm talking, think CIA, FBI, think about rich oil men, think about Minutemen, different organizations. Think about generals who hated Kennedy's guts. Think about the CIA that Kennedy said he was going to smash into a million pieces. Think about the World Bank. We have John McCloy right there on the Warren Commission. He's a former president of the World Bank. We have, it's amazing. We have Dulles there, right there on the Warren Commission as part of the main staff there, one of the commissioners, and he was fired by Kennedy. He's the CIA. We have Gerald Ford, who had total connections with the FBI. There was no way that the Warren Commission could do anything about going down the proper trail. Now, Jim Garrison tried to do that. He assembled the groups in Dr. Oxner's own official biography that you can read for yourself, called Surgeon of the South, where Ochsner complains that Garrison tried to arrest him for being involved in the assassination plot to kill Kennedy. So we have it, but the Warren Commission ignored it. And that's the way it was for a lot of us. However, Garrison found out, he found records. He didn't find my witnesses. I have them on film. I have them on audio tape, who saw me with Lee and knew we were lovers. But he did have records of a woman being seen with Lee Oswald at key places. This is Clinton and Jackson. Jackson, Louisiana. Two individuals saw a woman in a car with and connected with Lee Oswald at the time that we were delivering the biological weapon up to Jackson, the mental hospital there where the prisoners were. I had to go up to do a blood test on them. And some of these records have evolved and have been, exhumed, you might say, but all of this was ignored by the Warren Commission. They got it so wrong. Many books have come out with speculations. I am a witness. And unfortunately, some people who are researchers have gotten angry at me because their books got canceled. Or then we have doctors who are angry at me because nobody's donating to their causes anymore. The hospitals I mentioned, the people I mentioned, connected to big organizations. Even the History Channel has, in their conspiracy section on Kennedy assassination, it's right there on the Internet. It says that Judith Very Baker claims to have helped develop AIDS. Can you imagine? I've told them that's not true, but they put it on there anyway. I get death threats. I've had to move out of the country and live overseas now for 7 years just because of incidents that happened and attempts to kill me. So, I mean, this is real and it's still going on. If you don't think it's not still going on, how could we have 38 of 39 specials last year on the 50th anniversary that said Lee Oswald did it, when we have a million documents out there and with anyone with any IQ above 2 digits, all right, can find out in 3 hours that Lee Oswald was framed?
Well, I think, and then the question is, because he was involved at some level, right? And that's what you've said in your books. So What was his involvement specifically? If he wasn't a lone assassin or a communist Castro sympathizer, who was he?
Okay, well, here's the thing. We were developing this biological weapon. Lee had successfully been a spy in the USSR. You know, he returns to the United States with a wife and child. He, by the way, would have been deported if he hadn't married. He loved Marina. I'm not saying that. But they didn't get along very well. And he got her pregnant again so that she wouldn't be deported and he wouldn't lose his babies if they got a divorce. That makes sense, I think, to everybody. That doesn't mean that they had a marriage made in heaven. And I was neglected, and we, as I say, we fell in love. And here is Lee trying to protect me. He had also been sent by the CIA to oversee and make sure the project did not get in the wrong hands. Well, why Lee Oswald? First of all, coming back to the United States, Lee had to prove to me when I met him that he was one of ours, that he wasn't, you know, a communist or anything like that. He assured me, and you'll find it in the records, Lee never even joined the Communist Party when he was in the USSR. Isn't that amazing? He never did. And I think he couldn't bear to bring himself to that point. He returned to the U.S. when we meet in April. By June, we're lovers. And he says, I want to prove to you just how close I am to customs and to, you know, to the government. In many ways, he did this so that I would trust him in every direction. Now, he had been brought into the project, as I said, not only to protect me, but he was watching over it for the CIA. Well, to do that, he had to play a special role. The first, one of the things he did is introduced me to the customs officer who was flown in from Miami. His name is Charles Thomas. I later was able to contact Charles Thomas's family and describe to them how Charles Thomas, he had silvery hair, he had an accent, I've been told it's Welsh, I thought it was German or something, because I didn't know, I was young, you know, but one thing I certainly did know is when I shook his hand, he had tattoos on his fingers, and he told me he was married to a Chittimacha Indian, so he, because when I said, are you married to a U.S. citizen, because he had many Castroite and Cuban friends, he said yes. To an American citizen who is more American than I am because she is a Chittimacha Indian. So I knew these things, and I was able to track them down. And, oh, my goodness, at first they were so upset. They said, no, not our Charles. Not. Yes, he had tattoos on his fingers. Yes, he was, you know, customs officer, all these things. And I even knew he had been in customs up at Buffalo, New York, right where the Crystal Beach is. And I said, you know, Lee took when he was a kid and living in New York, he went to the border there. He went to cross over, and he met Charles Thomas at that time. So they had a connection that was almost 10 years long. I mean, it's really something. So they knew each other. So when I explained these, they even gave me a picture showing Charles Thomas right there at the border, and you could see a bus coming in the background from Crystal Beach. Of course, I didn't know that they had such photos or they knew any of that. So anyway, I have all these witnesses. Now, Lee Oswald is telling me, this customs officer, he wants me to meet him. And so I did. I shook his hand, Charles Thomas's hand, saw the tattoos. And then Lee showed me his passport. He had gotten, he had asked and filled out the forms for the passport on June 24. It said on the passport application form, he intended to return to the USSR and go to Cuba. Now, understand that spies or anyone spying for the Soviet Union would see that. It's right on his passport, his intention to return to Cuba, I mean, to go visit Cuba and to return to the USSR. But imagine, that passport was processed and approved in 24 hours. I saw it myself. It's in the Warren Commission report. It shows the application made the 24th. He gets his passport on the 25th. I met the man who did it, shook his hands. You imagine how brave I thought Lee was for all that he was doing, because he now began posing as pro-Castro. He was bringing out, by passing out pamphlets and handbills and everything, he was establishing himself as pro-Castro so he could take this biological weapon all the way to Mexico City, hand it off to one of these medical contacts, and no one would suspect he was anti-Castro. That's all it is, but you know, it opened him up as a suspect, and of course immediately they used him and framed him, and he couldn't defend himself, Doug, because if he said, look, I'm from the Office of Naval Intelligence and I was borrowed by the CIA, I'm in this project to kill Castle, he couldn't say any of that. His contacts that he had made in almost 3 years in the USSR, they would have rounded them up and shot them. This was the height of the Cold War. His mother, I don't know what might have happened to everybody here, but Marina Oswald's mother and her was dead by then, but her other family members were alive, like her uncle, and he was a low-ranking KGB officer. I mean, they would have killed them. They would have, what they call, they have their different words that they used back then, but many people would have died, and it would have messed up everything. They knew that Lee would never break. He would never tell his true connection. He was a patriot, and all he could say is, I'm a patsy. That doesn't sound like, does it, somebody who's seeking glory in this world? I mean, the official version that is in the Warren Commission is this man was seeking some kind of glory for himself by killing Kennedy. No, they have no motive for him. It's the last thing. He even taught me to care about Kennedy. I came from Florida, Doug. And I was with, I had dated Tony Lopez Fresquette. He was the son of the finance minister of Castro's Cuba. And he had to flee to the United States because his mother was an American. And I learned how Castro had tortured the CIA agents and so many of them and killed them in the Bay of Pigs. And they hated Kennedy. Oh, dear God, how they hated Kennedy. And so I came with all kinds of prejudice because of all my friends at the University of Florida who were anti-Castro. Lee sets me aside and he starts teaching me about the truth about Kennedy, the truth that his generals and the CIA, and that's why he fired Dulles, Allen Dulles, because he and Charles Cabell ran the Bay of Pigs and forced him to have to take a choice of bombing Havana and getting involved maybe in World War III, or looking very bad, and he took the choice. He said, I'll take it. I'll look very bad then, but we're not going to have Havana bombed, and maybe then we'll lose 25 million American people, or maybe more, you know, with retaliation from the USSR who would defend Cuba. So Kennedy took it on the chin, took the blame, and at first, David Ferry thought it was Kennedy's fault. He stood before 70 military officers, and it was their very first meeting in New Orleans, and they invited him to speak because David was known to be very conservative and to be a real hero. A lot of them knew that he had been helping to train people to, you know, be in that Bay of Pigs invasion and so on. So he was a speaker there. And he told them Kennedy ought to be shot. That's what some people think, you know? Like maybe somebody's behind a bush and he'll shoot him. Well, they asked him to leave the stage. But there were men there in that group of 70 who hated Kennedy and wanted to see him die. And they knew David Ferry was a very talented man. He could fly bush planes in and out of Cuba without even being noticed. He could land on a beach. Like Dave told me, he could land on the back of a turtle. I mean, you know, he was so good with planes. And he knew five languages. He could speak Spanish fluently as well as English. And he knew German and French and Italian and, of course, English. He knew all kinds of things about the Kennedy myth. Well, later, he learned more. David Ferry realized later that it wasn't Kennedy's fault. And, of course, you can read about all of that in James Douglas' wonderful book, JFK and the Unspeakable, where you'll hear about the treachery of these men. I mean, after all, General Charles Cabell, for example, was fired. He was CIA and a military general. So the CIA actually takes military officers, and people don't realize they're not separate. A lot of people don't know that. CIA will make agents of our own military officers. Well, in this case, Charles Cabell was fired by Kennedy. Guess what? Guess who is Charles Cabell's brother? Earl Cabell, the mayor of Dallas. That's, of course, where Kennedy was shot. So when you see the big picture, you pull it all together. And I've got it in both books.
Okay, let me interrupt one more time to let our listeners know you're listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today is Judith Ferry Baker, Lee Harvey Oswald's lover and confidant during the period leading up to JFK's assassination. She is the author of two books revealing what she claims are facts that clear Lee Oswald Today's show is pre-recorded.
I'd like to make one little comment, because the word claims is the one that's used by a lot of people, but the book has been examined by statisticians for the events that happened, and one of them is Dr. John Delane Williams, who has statistically analyzed all the evidence files I have and says that it's 1,000,000 to 1 that we were involved in this together, because he worked very hard on it. And the other is that it's 99% chance that we were intimate. I mean, you will see from the things I collect, not many people would collect check stubs, all right, and keep them for 50 years like I have. They just don't do these things. But I did, because Lee and I were hired the very same day by a very tiny company called Standard, where we had our records laundered. 1 week later, at the same day, we were transferred to Riley Coffee Company. There we worked together for 11 weeks. It was like a cover job for us. And we have Jerry Hemming saying that William V. Riley, head of the company, had been with the CIA for years. We have all. So people do not attack the book that attacked me. They attack my character, my personality, my age, and my looks. They don't bring up the book because they don't want people to read it.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to read the whole book, and I certainly am not going to attack your personality or your character.
People, when they meet me, Doug, here's what's happening. Like, I'm on a 31-city book tour. I can't afford that on Social Security, but I've been brought over by people, Facebook donations. I mean, when you have, like, over 200 people have made donations, so I have been able to go from city to city. They've paid the plane tickets. They've paid for the hotels. I'm going to be, for example, in November, I will be November 22, 23, 24, I'm going to be in Dallas. We're going on a wonderful assassination conference. It's Dallas Arlington. It's just outside of Dallas, 15 minutes from the grassy knoll, from the Texas School Book Depository, from Dealey Plaza. We have so much going on. Just to give you an idea, I said, I need to get to Chicago. Well, I had 4 donations right away, and then 15 donations. I mean, that was just to get to Chicago. So there are many places I'm going, and it's because people have read the book. They're sick of the lies, and wherever I go, I'm able to show them the actual documents and things. I talk to them, and when they meet me, they realize these bad things that have been said about me are untrue. So it's been growing. I mean, it's been years, and every year, last year was pretty good. This year, it's just like an avalanche of support. It's been incredible.
There was recently more documents released from the Kennedy assassination not too long ago, I think last year maybe. And one of the scenarios that came out was that the Secret Service definitely covered up, and that it's very possible that one of the Secret Service agents fired the fatal shot to the back of President Kennedy's head.
Of course, we know that's not true. What they're trying to do is they're so desperate now, because it's so obvious that Lee Oswald couldn't have made the kill shot, that they're even blaming the Secret Service now. A wonderful book has been printed by Trinday, which is also my publisher, and it's called Survivor's Guilt. Survivor's Guilt, this is by Vince Palomara. He's the number one expert on the Secret Service in the world. And he made many tapes and recordings years ago of these Secret Service agents. The Secret Service agent that's taking the blame for this because they can't say that Lee Oswald made the shot anymore. Too much evidence is there. But that doesn't stop the media from saying it's still Lee Oswald, even when the Secret Service came out last year with this silly report, because we have no, you know, when he supposedly fired at Kennedy, if you look at the film, he's not involved at all in any such action. And, of course, he's trying to take the blame so that it looks like an accident, to take the focus off the truth that the Secret Service wasn't taking good care of Kennedy. They lied and said that they were ordered off his car. In fact, Vince Palomara has all the reports showing that Kennedy never had any opportunity to order anybody off his car. He has to do what the Secret Service says. That's the law. And, you know, Abraham Bolden is the one that we can go to find out what really is going on with the Secret Service. He was the first black Secret Service agent. He was with the Kennedy detail for a time. He was in Chicago. And here, the full truth is that Lee Oswald had penetrated the group thanks to David Ferry, who was, after he learned the truth about Kennedy, he still pretended to be anti-Kennedy so he could penetrate these groups. He gave the information to Lee Oswald. That's why we have the two books, so that you can correlate between them. We couldn't put it in a 1,000-page book. Both books are over 500 pages. So we have the information and how the cover-up was done. Abraham Bolden, his Secret Service agent, was in Chicago. And at the time, just before the assassination, we're talking about 3 weeks before the assassination, standing there with his boss. And by the way, I'm going to be meeting Abraham in just a few days in Chicago. We're friends, and he has gone on film explaining exactly what I'm going to tell you now. And that is, there was a call from the FBI. And they said, look, don't come and protect Kennedy. We've called it off. Kennedy was just about to get on the plane and come to Chicago when they arrested armed men in Chicago who were plotting to kill Kennedy. And the informant's name was Lee. Now, that was Lee Harvey Oswald. Abraham Bolden has written The Echo from Dealey Plaza. So we have Secret Service being involved here on a specific matter that they're supposed to be protecting the president. They're told to stand down there because Kennedy's not coming, but it's the FBI that's telling them who's responsible. And Lee told me, Judy, he thought he wasn't going to survive. He told me, please tell my little girls when they grow up, tell them who I really was, that I was a good guy. So if you know the whole story, it'll break your heart. I've had so many people have read it, and they understand where I'm coming from, and they know that when the government is so desperate, it now is going to say its own people killed Kennedy. That's how desperate they are for you not to hear the truth. The truth is that they allowed Kennedy to be killed. That's true. And the other thing is they don't want people to know about the biological cancer weapons. They don't want people to know about the polio contamination that gave you the SV40 monkey virus and all of your kids. It's a latent virus that can explode into cancer at any time. I'm an expert in that area. Edward T. Haslam in his book, Dr. Mary's Monkey, can go into more detail. But what they really don't want you to know is the big cover-up involved more than the Kennedy assassination. It involved the illegal and irresponsible use of biological agents, and we have that problem today, for example, with Ebola. If anybody tells you that Ebola is not cannot be transmitted by airborne methods, that's not true. Projectile vomiting or sneezing or coughing can actually spread the virus. You're not being told the truth about Ebola virus. Well, you're not being told the truth about hardly anything. If you believe everything the government says, please raise your hand.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't argue that with you. But let's let's get back to what Lee told you in the last. I believe what you said was the last phone call that he made, and he named some names. Who is responsible for the Kennedy assassination?
Lee told me he had been working very hard to find out who his handler was, because the handler was also responsible for the Kennedy assassination. He's the one that got together the underground and the support that they needed in order, for example, to get the body out of Dallas so it would be mutilated and changed and, the skull changed and everything, because we have x-rays that don't match the wounds that were described by Parkland doctors. We have a big picture of a whole bunch of doctors and nurses putting their hands on the back of the head. And they said there was a big hole in the back of the head. Well, John McAdams and the group that tries to control these things, they said that the doctors were too busy to look at the back of his head because they were trying to save his life. They just completely ignore these photos. Because the photos that we have from Bethesda show that it's intact. The skull is intact in the back. I mean, all of these things have been done. Now, if you would repeat your question.
The question is, what were the Lee Harvey Oswald when he phoned you, gave you some names to remember, according to what you what you've said. And so, who are their name? What are those names?
All right. So anyway, Lee had discovered the covert people behind this. It was being led, he said, and not to forget the name, it was by his own handler, David Atlee Phillips. And Phillips would go on to found the CIA retired thing. He went on to become the head of all the operations in the Western Hemisphere. He was a very important man. That was David Atlee Phillips. And he said, not that they were responsible themselves, but two other people, the assassination was occurring because of them. And those two individuals, Billy Solestes and Bobby Baker. Now, Billy Solestes had been in the news. It was a scandal with Lyndon Johnson going on, an enormous one involving bribery and corruption. It even got on the cover of Time magazine and Newsweek, and all of them reporting this. And this is just before the assassination, extending back a year. On top of that, besides Billy Solestes, Bobby Baker. That was also right on the front pages and everything. A committee was taking testimonies on November 22nd, the day that Kennedy was shot dead. And those testimonies involved Lyndon Johnson receiving bribery and gifts and all kinds of things, thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands, from the mafia and from others. And he accepted them, and they were preparing to indict him and put him on trial and remove him, you know, impeach him as vice president. Now, Lyndon Johnson knew that committee was meeting and was getting that testimony. That was the same day Kennedy is shot dead in Dallas. Instead of going to jail, Lyndon Johnson becomes president of the United States and disbands the committee. Of course, he has the ability to do that. And, you know, after we have Gerald Ford, later will become president. After Nixon is removed from office, we have all this corruption and everything going on. And I'm telling you, these people were working together. And we still have some. Dick Cheney was with Nixon. We have all kinds of people that are behind the scenes. They're still gatekeepers, stopping these things from becoming known to the public. Lee Oswald, Lee said he was going to do everything he could. And he believed that they would do what they could because of his background. He looked like a communist. In the papers, they said he was a communist and proud of it. That's not true. Many lies were put in there. They said he ate a chicken sandwich and drank a Dr. Pepper while he was waiting to shoot at the motorcade, when we now know it was somebody else who ate the chicken sandwich and left the remains there. Hey, they were trying to get Lee's stomach pumped. I mean, the hatred and anger. They said there was a map that showed how he had calculated how to shoot. It turned out that was a map showing bus routes. But the truth, you know, would appear on page 35 instead of on the front page, the correction later. So all this evil and anger against Lee Oswald was presented, and nobody looks anywhere else when you have a scapegoat.
Well, that would be the function of the scapegoat, wouldn't it? The fact, seems like we always have the lone assassin.
The only country to have lone assassins. No conspiracies in America, even though throughout history, that's how governments get remove the top guy and bring in a new junta.
Yeah, well, we promote a lot of that in the world today American foreign policy does a lot of that. We know that, right? Libya, what's going on in Ukraine.
Yeah. What business do we have to have 900 bases? We, America, why are we sending troops into Ebola-infested lands? I mean, why are we the policemen of the world when our own people need so much help? Now, I live overseas. I live in Scandinavian countries. I have to move every 90 days. That's what I have to do. But I've spent so much time in Scandinavia where they have like 5 weeks of vacation, paid vacation. They have free medical care. They have free college education. In this country, everybody's afraid of getting a terminal disease. They're afraid to go to the hospital because they'll lose their home. If they get cancer, they're, you know, it's a death sentence. I'm speaking out against the cancer treatment industry because they're making billions of dollars. They're not putting any of it toward research to cure cancer. They're putting it into research to make more chemicals to treat cancer. It's a whole different thing. We could have cured cancer in the 1970s, Doug. I knew that's what I wanted to do in my whole life, is to see cancer cured. My grandma died of it. That was my passion. I was kicked out of the industry for not wanting to break my ethical standards. And fact is, we do not have any ethical standards when it comes to cancer. It's all about money, and it's a crime. It should be against the law to have for-profit hospitals. Do not go to a for-profit hospital. It's criminal to think that a hospital is going to try and get as much money as they can from you to give you as little treatment as possible. Think about it. Think about what you allow to happen to yourself in this country. And you take it, and you take it, and you take it. And money is God in this country. It makes me sick to see what's happening to my country.
I would agree with you there. Of course, we grew up at a time when hospitals were run by the counties and the cities.
And charity. Yeah.
And by charity, yeah. And Americans don't even know about that.
I mean, now it's an industry, and to get as much money out of the poor, suffering, desperate people as possible. I mean, this Ebola patient was for hours in an emergency room that's crowded with other people, and they didn't give him very good treatment. Do you know you get better medical care in Slovenia, in Europe, than you do in the United States? And, oh, so much cheaper for me. And if I were a citizen, it'd be free. So what's going on?
Yeah, well, I mean, lots of profit is going on.
When we talk about conspiracy, let's talk about conspiracy to make money on every level. And if you know the truth about Kennedy, they even say, you know, he's a womanizer. A lot of the kids, all they know is that Kennedy had love affairs. They don't talk about how Kennedy did his best, his very best, to even issue real money, to even to stop us from going into World War III, to try and control the CIA, which is completely out of control. Yeah, you come ahead, come get me, because, you know, I don't care anymore.
Well, that's a very brave stance, and I think you're saying things that Americans need to think about. You gave me a couple of names, and so let's focus on what the motives of these people. What is their motives, or who were who?
It's so easy. We have J. Edgar Hoover, who proclaimed only 4.5 hours after Lee Oswald was arrested. Only 4.5 hours after he was arrested, he proclaimed that Lee Oswald was the only one involved. Now, how did he do this? Because they hadn't even gotten the evidence at the FBI offices. But what we do know is that Lyndon Johnson and Edgar Hoover, who was the head of the FBI, the director, that Kennedy was going to sack him as soon as he turned 70. Instead, Lyndon Johnson made him the director for life. That happened right away. We have Lyndon Johnson, who could go to jail. So you see him as the cavalcade going around the corner into Dealey Plaza. You see Kennedy about to get shot, but you can't see Lyndon Johnson because he's ducking. Oh, Lady Bird, you can see her head. There's no Lyndon Johnson. The films show that he is hiding himself, protecting himself before the first shots ring out. You have the Secret Service that was upset at being going to be revamped. Kennedy was going to be changing a lot of things. Secret Service, you know, is there to protect, if you didn't know it, the Treasury. Did you know that? The Office of the Treasury. They're not. So when we talk about Kennedy issuing U.S. Treasury notes instead of Federal Reserve notes, and billions of dollars worth of them, even though he publicly praises the Feds and says how he's going to work with them, behind the scenes, he's issuing so much money that they're going to go out of business. But you see, the Secret Service is connected to the Treasury. So that's why you see them standing down. And we have more. We have oil men who financed the cover-up, made sure they could buy up media. Kennedy was going to raise taxes on oil rather than raise taxes on the people. Oil, ever since the Kennedy assassination, has been heavily subsidized by the U.S., even though they make billions upon billions of dollars and that completely get evaded as far as taxes go. Then you have, like, the Minutemen and all these conservatives that were angry at Kennedy because, after all, Kennedy had Martin Luther King in his own office there. He actually was supporting civil rights and brought in troops to try when Meredith and all of them were in danger. You know, he wanted to see integration occur. So they hated him. Then there are anti-Catholics that hated him. And above all, you have the mafia. Bobby Kennedy was after the mafia, whereas Johnson would only put only a few hundred of them in jail before him. And after Kennedy, that's the way it was. But during Kennedy's reign, we're talking about over 2,000 mafiosa end up in prison. He was after Carlos Marcello. Bobby Kennedy had him deported, dumped in the jungles of the Honduras, where he was supposed to die. David Ferry was one of those to help rescue Marcello. So he got in very close to those who wanted to kill Kennedy just because of things like that. So the books, David Ferry and Lee Harvey, and the one of me and Lee, they're going to give you information, and when you pull it together, it connects the dots. The other people that were against Kennedy, and there's such a consortium of them, were all the anti-Castroites. They were furious because Kennedy allowed, he would not bomb Havana, he didn't give air support at the Bay of Pigs, and so they hated him because of all the people they lost. When you put all these people together, the FBI, the CIA, that Kennedy said he was going to smash in 1,000 pieces, fired Alan Dulles, and here Alan Dulles ends up on as a member, the most important member and the most active member of the Warren Commission. All along the way, you see Kennedy's enemies lined up, and when you have a whole consortium like that, look, the FBI couldn't say the CIA did it, because the CIA could say, look, we have evidence that you helped. That's why it was able to be kept quiet all these years. All these agencies had the dirt on the other agencies.
Well, certainly J. Edgar Hoover had the dirt on everybody. And,
he certainly did.
Yeah. And he was implicated by the Church Committee in the Martin Luther King assassination, too.
That's right.
Yeah, but nobody ever delved into that either.
But we now have evidence that Hoover was poisoned, you know. I mean, there are a lot of good FBI agents. There are a lot of good CIA agents, and some of them, I feel, sometimes have protected me seriously. They know what happened. Some of them do. They've gone into it. And I haven't had the threats this year that I've had in the past.
Well, that's good. That's a good thing. And yeah. You're out on your book tour. We're going to have to shut it down, but I want to thank you for being on Unspun, an Experiment of Truth Telling with us today. And
God bless you all, and keep looking for the truth. The truth will set us free. We can't be free. We can't be born free. Our kids can't be born free unless we realize we have to work together. I think from the ground up, it's too corrupt at the top. Those are all puppets. They're all bought out, so change the government at the bottom. That's where you can do some good.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to end it there. Judith Vary Baker, thank you very much.
Well, God bless you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Unspun, an Experiment of Truth Telling. My guest today was Judith Vary Baker, Lee Harvey Oswald's lover and confidant during his last few months on Earth before being shot while in custody by Jack Ruby. It's a compelling story of love, intrigue, and conspiracy. Judith is very brave to be on a book tour here in America, and so I will put links to her books and to some of the other things she's done, like the Men Who Killed Kennedy series, the episode about her, the love affair, and other things, and those will all be on our website at kkrn.org in the Unspun Archives. So I want to thank you for listening today to Unspun, an Experiment in Truth-Telling. Next up on KKRN, Peace Talks Radio.